Happy Veterans Day, Patrick.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks. Happy Veterans Day, Patrick.
Yeah. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. It's been a while.
And all veterans.
Yes.
I got to hang out with a bunch of veterans last weekend at a gala for one of my old roommates who's a 3-star now.
Ooh. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Very cool.
What's the difference between a room full of generals and a room full of privates?
Oh, God. What?
Base pay. You get a bunch of generals and colonels together, they act like idiots, just like privates.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, that's the case.
Generally yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where do we start this week? I'm looking over the, 5 or 6 stories that we have, and, you know, I'm seeing the usual stuff, ransomware and breaches.
There's a lot more about state activity, more overt. It's starting to come more into light.
Yeah.
State hackers breach defense in energy and health quote organizations worldwide, for example.
Yep, and Cyber Command getting more involved. Yep. So there's actually quite a bit of state stuff going on.
General Nakasone. There's a lot going on there.
Well, let's unpack that first article that you just brought up, Pat.
Okay. So according to Bleeping Computer, a source that we use quite a lot, Palo Alto Networks is warning of ongoing hacking campaigns that have already resulted in compromise of at least 9 organizations across bandwidths of defense, healthcare, energy, technology, and education. And so it looks like what they're doing is they're going after a well-documented vulnerability in Zoho's enterprise password management solution. So that's kind of sad because these people actually have enterprise password management and they've been hoisted on their own petard.
Well, and I believe, if I remember correctly, that package is actually designed for self-service. So it allows your general average user who may have issues, may need to reset their password or whatever it is, to go and do that without having to bother the tech staff. So here we come back to Patrick's well-known, I don't know what we call this, adage. Yes, that what I'll let you say it, Patrick. You ready?
Convenience is the enemy of security.
Right. So this is convenient. An end user can go and, you know, service their own password, etc. But there again, it opens up another door for security issues.
You know, Zoho is one of these companies or brands that has so many services under its roof.
Kind of like CA back in the day?
Yeah, well, yeah, right. I have subscribed to a Zoho service that isn't the password manager, enterprise password manager. But I'm wondering if I'm okay, or is all of Zoho...
I think it's
vulnerable.
Just with their password management. I don't think it's generically across their platforms.
Right. It's very specifically a certain CVE, so 2021-40539, if you want to track what the technical issues are there. But it literally is in this one piece of software that they put out where a remote code execution vulnerability was found. So, you know, nation state actors can run malicious things over the internet against servers that are exposed and get code to run. And then what's interesting here is, you know, that's not where they stop, right? You don't just go, huzzah, I'm able to open calculator, right?
Gotcha.
I gotcha.
It's right. Not counting coup where they just touch you.
Right. So this is not even sure what that is, Patrick.
You don't know about counting coup?
I don't.
It's a Native American tradition in some tribes where you go and touch your sleeping enemy.
I have heard of that.
And they've done it. The bears was usually who they did it with. They'd go into a den and touch a sleeping bear.
Wow. Yeah.
And those that lived, which wasn't all of them, would, you know, they counted coup.
That's impressive. Wow, I learned something today. That's awesome. Patrick,
awesome. It's got to happen once a year.
You know, I have a quick story from the early days of the internet when I was one of the few people who claimed to have a T1 in their house.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I remember that.
A router, and of course, NAT didn't exist, so we were all right on the internet, and you know, it was completely insecure. And I remember using my NT machine, and I went into a directory and I saw a little text file called hack.txt. There is nothing in it, but I'm like, I think I'm going to shore this up a little bit somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember those early days. Where everything was on the internet, and if you went home for the day and you wanted to print to a printer at work, you just opened up your computer and connected to the printer at work, and
it was very
no VPN.
Convenient.
Mm-hmm.
It was very convenient. Yes.
Hence sans security.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. This one, you know, once they gain access to the system by running remote, having this remote code vulnerability, there's a playbook they all follow. So this particular APT or advanced persistent threat they were tracking as APT-27, also known as the Emissary Panda or the Iron Tiger or the Lucky Mouse.
I'm in Star Trek land again. These are just names for
these are just names
groups.
For APT-27.
Yeah. Yeah. APT-27 is the name of the group.
Yep. So they're tracked as APT-27.
And well, APT, we should define what that means. APT sure. is an advanced persistent threat. In other words,
yeah, he said that.
Okay. So that any APT, any of these groups is an APT, Fancy Bear. And many of them have different names because they think, okay, we saw this attack. We're going to give them this code name. And then they find out later it's somebody they've already named.
Okay.
Yeah.
So or you'll have not like names. It's not like these groups name themselves then.
No,
it's not
no,
like,
no.
Hey, we're starting a band. What are we going to call it?
Sometimes it's because of a variable name in their code. Sometimes it's because of a comment.
A lot of times it's where they come from. So Emissary Panda, for example.
Very
so
racist.
Who names them?
Most security researchers and security companies do. So take CrowdStrike. They're probably the most famous for naming APTs, because nobody's going to remember APT-27,
wow.
right?
I want to work for them. I want right? to be on the team that names these hacker
The names
groups.
Are fantastic.
I think I mean, they have some one of those wheels where they just spin the wheels and whatever it comes to.
So would it come? What? So they've broken it down where it's the different countries have different animals, and
right.
then depending on the type of attack, they name it. So for example, there's the widow spider is one of them, or the zombie spider, or the zombie tiger, or whatever. So they're depending on the country they come from. Obviously, pandas are usually from China.
China bears.
Bears
Russia.
Are usually from Russia.
I get
so
it.
They have, and then when they have APTs that they can't attribute to a state, then they start giving them all sorts of weird names. But there's like the Lucky Mouse. You're like, I'm not sure where they came from. According to this, the Emissary Panda, what they do is then they deploy things like backdoors. In this particular case, I think they said
Godzilla.
They deployed the Godzilla web server.
Godzilla.
and then from there, a couple
it's
backdoors.
It's funny you say Godzilla because this article says in early March, APT-27 was also linked to attacks exploiting critical bugs dubbed proxy log on, and you just reminding me of all those old creature feature movies
Gamera
like Godzilla
that
were all overdubbed.
Yeah,
you so know where the guy's saying Godzilla and his mouth is still moving afterwards.
So good.
Dubbed anyway.
Proxy log on.
Silly, silly.
So
all
that's
right,
an interesting one. Nothing to worry about though.
Okay, so there's no take home.
But well,
no, I mean, unless you're a company that runs a Zoho Enterprise password management solution, I would go look for a patch.
Well, and it probably stands to a reason that you've already been notified.
Mm-hmm. But the point here is that it's a state-sponsored hack. It's
right.
This is nation-state sponsored, and that is somewhat of a theme today.
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
All right. What's next?
So the next one we should talk about is CyberCom.
Cyber Command.
Okay. Cyber Command, U.S. Cyber Command. So the world is starting to turn in the direction I think it needs to. General Nakasone is the head of Cyber Command, and he's very well respected. And they now are acknowledging that they've been carrying out a surge to address ransomware attacks.
They never called me.
No, they did not.
Did they call you?
I cannot affirm or deny. I will not affirm or deny.
They called Dwayne. I see the Lamborghini parked in the driveway.
Oh, yeah. With my pet
But this
tiger.
Is good. This is what we need to see is because the U.S. has been sitting on its hands for a long time in this field and watching things happen.
So what'd they do?
the NSA has finally determined that they got to get in the game. They got to play at the same level, because if things got hot, it's hard to go from zero to full motion, full speed.
So what exactly does this surge mean? What did they actually do?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different things. So first off, they're starting to rethink and engage more people. So, you know, they talk about actually, you know, engaging some of their out-of-the-box thinkers in how to confront this. But they're also looking to engage with people out of the commercial land, right? So, you know, people who are just security experts, don't work for the military, live in the United States and looking to, you know, have outside researcher help, which is good, because I think, you know, it's important that you start drawing in not just, you know, any security expert who wants to help protect these systems and may have information. The other thing that was interesting about this surge was the fact that they're not only attacking the technology, but they're also attacking the money stream as well. So who's funding these groups to create the ransomware, or where is the money going once the ransomware is paid, right? So they're really start, and it's something the U.S. has been really good at. You know, the FBI, it's a division of the Treasury, right? They've been tracking money laundering and that sort of stuff since the FBI was created. So it's interesting for them to now get engaged in that manner as well.
Well, about time, huh?
Right. I was chuckling at the beginning of this because we have U.S. Cyber Command, and it reminds me that this weekend I was on Twitter, where I follow a lot of security researchers and that sort of stuff. And when new APT groups come out, usually there's this chart that comes out about all of the APT groups across the world. And what's funny is when you look at the chart, they have like a whole section for Russia and a whole section for China and a whole section for Iran and a whole section for North Korea. And one of the U.S. security researchers replied and said, wow, the U.S. and the U.K. really still got to start getting better at their security game. There's none of them on this APT chart.
Or is that good?
Which just goes to show.
Maybe that's really good.
Right. I'm just betting, so in China, they probably have a different chart.
The U.S. has thrown that out there. Credited, blamed, accused, depending on how you look at it, at building Stuxnet, which is at the time was the absolute moonshot for cyber warfare.
Oh, yeah.
To think that we've lost our edge is probably unrealistic.
No, it's just funny how, you know, we don't show up on any of those lists. And it's probably because we're the ones creating the list.
So, well, I also noticed in this article that President Biden reached out to Vladimir Putin to see if he could please stop the hacking. And I wonder what that phone call was like. Mr.
Called
Putin,
him about Putin into it.
Hey, Putin.
could you please tell your people to stop hacking us, because it's really rude. It's not nice. And,
you think Joe Biden's that nice? I don't think he is. I think it's, I heard he swears like a sailor in private. So I'm sure it's like, hey, listen, you bastard. Wow. Stop. Okay, maybe.
Well, I just imagine that. And then Putin saying, sure, no problem. I'll get on it right away.
So I had an idea that.
Yuri.
If the NSA, if the NSA released a list of accounts, you know, crypto accounts, and kept it up to date all the time, and said any money, cryptocurrency that comes out of that account and touches another account without it being reported immediately, that next account is contaminated and is then, you know, it, part of the list, and basically blacklist it so that they can't be used and the money will be seized in any wallet that receives money from those.
That'd be awesome. You know what I would do?
You'd send a little money
if
to everybody.
I own one of those accounts.
Right. But that's why the report.
Exactly.
That's why the report process comes. I'm just wondering if there's a way to.
See, you know, I knew they called Dwayne. I knew it.
Well, I wonder if there's a way to, you know, to foil them so that they can't, like, get the money. Because they're draining millions and maybe even billions out of the Western world. If we can just keep them from getting that money and using it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, honestly, I think that's one of the latest tactics from Cyber Command and probably other departments as well.
Well, not specifically that,
right.
But yes.
Is tracking the money and trying to figure out where's it going and who's getting paid. And, you know, the great thing about crypto, I'd say most of the coins and markets are all trackable. It's all a public chain, except for when you start talking about Monero, which, you know, according to them, is everything's dark and you have no idea where the transactions go, which means it's also not verifiable in some ways. But so, yeah, no, I agree. And you know what? We as a company have access to certain databases that allow us to track certain crypto.
You know what you could do so at the exchange level? You could
see how
say
Pat
when it
just cut him off when he started to talk about sensitive stuff.
He did. Yeah. He's like, hey, hey, don't talk about that stuff. Hey. Let's talk about the exchange.
You know what?
Don't about, about the Red Sox.
Don't so how about that weather?
Wicked pisser.
Ixnay on the Egret say.
They're going to take away your Lamborghini, sir.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
They're driving in with Repo Man's here now.
Do you like a top bunk or a bottom bunk in your cell?
Club Fed, here I come.
Oh, yeah. No, great. No.
I'm sorry,
you don't
Pat.
Don't go Club Fed for that kind
no.
of stuff.
Sorry, Pat. I completely cut you off when you
completely when I was cutting Wayne off.
Wayne off. Thank yeah. you. Thank you. My thoughts were if you have money in an exchange.
Yes.
And you don't explicitly acknowledge every transfer in, then you can't send any until you acknowledge all the transfers in. And any that you don't acknowledge, that money goes to a separate wallet that's maintained by the government. And so that if you acknowledge that that money was sent to you, then now, well, you're receiving money from someone who's stole that money. So now your wallet's forfeit. And so there is a way to get away from the, you know, the hacker sending a little money to everybody to poison the well. You could just make people say, yes, I expected this payment and I know who this is. And now you're a witness in a ransomware prosecution.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, yeah.
Because if you just cut it off from the West, you can't stop it from being used in the East. But
yeah.
All right. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember what we're saying. Let's change the subject.
Well, let's move on to the next one. Nucleus from Bleeping Computer, 13 TCP security bugs impact critical healthcare devices.
Yeah.
We've sort of talked about the you know, the ransomware that has gone up for hospitals and things and the ugly stuff that goes on there. But this is a little bit
different. Well, their supply chain. They're going after the operating system that actually runs a lot of things that are in
right.
medical devices.
Yeah. Yeah. So the operating system in this case is the RTOS, or real-time operating system. I don't know. I don't name these things. Okay. So the RTOS yeah. is from Siemens.
Sounds like a Microsoft.
Siemens obviously supports everything okay. from medical systems to nuclear centrifuges. I mean, you name it. There's usually a Siemens controller and or, you know, device involved. And they have this operating system that does all sorts of things, whether depending on the device it's monitoring. There was a series of bugs, flaws found in the TCP/IP stack that allowed for, let's see, Project Menoria lasted for 18 months. Menoria?
What'd you call me?
Memoria. Lasted 18 months and led to the discovery of 78 vulnerabilities in 14 TCP/IP stacks. So it's a lot of vulnerabilities in
wow.
that were discovered that could affect tons of devices. They're speculating in this particular article, you know, I could see 3 billion devices, they say, just in the healthcare sector alone. So that's quite a bit.
And I know we've talked about this before, but TCP/IP refers to the collection of protocols that is used to move data around the internet and, in fact, most modern networks.
Yeah. And I think it's complicated to get TCP/IP to be more secure. It's like trying to secure DNS, which I'm sure we'll talk about maybe a little later.
Where this ties back into our theme, I think, is that while this was discovered by researchers and disclosed and there's already a fix for it, this is the kind of thing that if it had been discovered beforehand, it would have been a zero day. And so somebody might be crying in their milk this morning because this is revealed and now it's patched. If this were exploitable as a zero day in the past, I'd say there's a very high probability it was by a government, because hackers for profit, I don't see them going for medical devices this way, this deep, this deep down the rat hole of the supply chain. Maybe, but it's, I think it's less likely.
I don't know. I mean, if I could see if those medical devices were, say, pacemakers, and I could get a 0-day code with a time bomb on it that will stop the pacemaker in 10 days if you don't pay me some Bitcoin, I could.
Yeah, I could see that. But I think a nation state would be more interested in that kind of thing.
Sure.
Than a hacker, because the FBI is notoriously, all federal agencies across the world are notoriously bad about, oh, someone stole from you. Oh, I'm sorry. But when you actually kill someone, then it becomes a deal. Right. Then it becomes a thing.
Yeah, they have to steal a real lot for people to care.
Yeah, from the wrong people.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else to say about this particular? There's a lot of data here. How does it relate to?
Well, this is a great example of a researcher doing what they're supposed to do, finding bad things and releasing them, revealing to the vendor Siemens beforehand so they can get a fix, and then publishing after there's a fix available. That's the right cadence. That's the right way to go.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that Siemens didn't get the state police to arrest this guy and and go after him. Oh no, that's Missouri.
It's one of
Mississippi.
Missouri. It's one of the
Missouri.
It was Missouri.
No, I think it was Mississippi, wasn't it?
Now we got to look it up.
Had an M in it.
Okay,
Maine.
It was Mississippi.
It was Maine. It had an M in it.
That wasn't Maine.
Yeah. I think I remember Missouri because that's where my wife's family is.
So it's, some of these vulnerabilities are always fun to try and walk through and see, okay, would we discover those same bugs, et cetera. In this particular case, one of the particular services that was breached was the FTP service. So
you're right. It is Missouri.
There you go, Missouri. The FTP service is a file transfer. FTP stands for file transfer protocol, and it's just the ability to move files between devices. And there's a lot of protocols. It is an old protocol.
And it's an old protocol, right?
There's a lot of good things about the protocol in that it's pretty agnostic in transferring data between different types of operating systems. Like, for example, SMB is a way of transferring files between Windows systems. Doesn't work very well with Linux, right? So, but if you want to send data from any system to another system, FTP is not a bad way to do it. However,
you need to know how to open up a port on your firewall or use passive mode if your client supports it. I know this because I actually wrote a book for John Wiley and Sons called Visual Basic Internet Programming in 1994. And so I researched all these protocols and did implementations of them in Visual Basic. There's no way that code is even remotely usable now. But the thing about it is that if I don't know if you've ever tried using FTP from a client and going in, you connect to like an Azure web service or something like that, and then you do a dir or a list to see all the files, and nothing happens. It just stops, and that's because the FTP protocol by default wants to call you back through your firewall and have you answer the phone. And that is how it sends the data on a separate channel, a separate
socket.
Which
is a weird implementation nowadays. Yeah. But if you think about back in the early 80s and 90s where nobody had firewalls, everybody was directly connected. Sure. Yeah. Connect back to me because everybody connected directly to.
Well, some connections were one way.
Yeah. Right. But in this particular case, so as you would know, Carl, when you implement the FTP server and you type dir or you type ls, that's a command. And that the FTP server needs to understand that command.
Yeah.
Well, there's tons of commands. And one of the commands you can send to an FTP server is the user command, right? Who is the user who's supposed to be logged into this system?
Yeah. That's kind of like the, enter your username text box on a website.
Yeah, for those of you who have ever, for all of you who are bored on a Saturday night and are interested in playing around with FTP.
And if you're listening to this show, you probably are.
Probably. What are you doing? Go get
a
life.
If you were to download something like Netcat, which is just a raw socket connection type program, and connect into an FTP server. You don't need an FTP client. You literally could just connect into the socket that FTP's on and type the word user and hit enter and type in a username. So it's the command that your FTP client automatically sends to the FTP server to say, hey, here's my user account. Here's my password. In this case, they never verified right. that command. That command, you could create a buffer overflow, which we've talked about before on here. Imagine typing the word user and then having your username be 3,000 characters long, right? And that's what happened here. They weren't wow. checking to see that that username was of an appropriate size, and then that allowed them to run whatever the code they want.
So how long has this FTP server been out there?
I believe they stated 1 bazillion years.
Yeah, it must be. Were we even thinking about buffer overruns in FTP commands when, you know, in the 90s?
No, it's tough, though, because once you start getting into critical systems, medical, SCADA systems controlling, you know, nuclear power plants, energy systems, that sort of stuff, lots of people don't want to change that software daily. They don't want to patch it every 2 seconds. If it's a 1970s PLC right. controller that hasn't been touched at all and still works, let's never touch it, which means a lot don't of those vulnerabilities it. That have come out in the last 30 or 40 years, haven't been patched, which is tough. Wow. As you don't know what the patches are going to break and if Yikes. It's going to bring a critical system offline.
All right. So when Uncle Dave comes and brags about how he's still running Windows 2000 and he's never giving it up because it's the best operating system ever,
really
punch
hard.
Him in the throat.
Yes. Yes.
And then kick him in the balls.
That's solid advice from your techie crew here. Yes.
Yeah.
Or just step back while he gets hacked.
Follow me for more holiday suggestions.
So awesome. I know. Wow. Well, we're talking nation.
It's a violent episode.
I know, right? Patrick, how are you getting ready for Thanksgiving, Pat?
I am.
Yeah. What do you guys typically do?
We eat. That's
So occasionally, my wife's from Germany, so occasionally she'll do a full schnitzel. Jaeger schnitzel, and this is the year. So wait, it's a major.
Jaeger schnitzel. I know what Wiener schnitzel is. Veal. What's
so Wiener schnitzel is a breaded veal. Pork or veal sirloin cutlet, and it's breaded and it's pounded thin. Jaeger schnitzel is the same thing with a hunter sauce, which is a brown mushroom gravy.
Mushroom gravy, yeah,
fantastic.
Wow, Jaeger. Yeah, I get it. That's
hunter,
right?
Yeah, Jaeger means hunter.
Jägermeister. Master Hunter.
So we normally like have
alcohol
turkey
known to man.
Turkey or ham for Thanksgiving, but now we're subbing in the German favorite.
How about you, Dwayne?
We usually just do, you know, the normal thing, visiting family, eating a whole lot.
Do you drive the Lamborghini?
I do. With the pet leopard. You know, we gotta do that. He loves it when I do donuts in the middle of the street. It's awesome.
Oh, leopards are still last year. It's cheetahs this year.
All right. Are we done cheetahs with the TCPIP vulnerabilities?
I think we are.
Enough?
Never. Whoever's still with
never.
Us.
We've never be TCP. Done with them. Boop,
boop. All right. Let's go back to Bleeping Computer and see what I've ordered on Amazon lately. New Android malware targets Netflix, Instagram, and Twitter users. This sounds like something that regular Android phone users are going to want to pay attention to.
It's a skimmer, basically. Yep. Remember we talked about the gasoline pump skimmer? Yep. This is a skimmer for your credentials.
Yeah, so there was, and it's on your phone? I believe, one legitimate application that you could download from the Google Play Store that had this, call it a skimmer, but that would monitor for usernames and passwords, specifically for Netflix, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm not sure why Netflix is super important. And oddly enough, mostly in Poland and Turkey. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah, I have no idea why.
Yeah, I don't know.
A Turk living in Poland or a Pole living in Turkey?
Got me. But, you know, one of the things you want to be careful of, the reason we bring this one up is the app that you downloaded, if I remember correctly, the app that you were downloading on your Android phone that had this skimmer type program on it, was the sketchy app in and of itself. I believe it was like a Tor-style proxy browser. So it was literally, you know, designed to overlay HTML information on top of HTML pages and super easy for them to steal usernames and passwords.
So think about what Dwayne just said, overlay stuff. So basically in HTML, it's possible for you to put a transparent screen, let's say, over the existing screen, get some JavaScript to get the button clicks and the keyboard, you know, everything that's typed, everything that's clicked, and pass those through to the underlying HTML page, but it doesn't look any different. So there's no way for you to tell unless by chance something doesn't work and you're clicking on something and it's not doing anything. That's probably a good sign that you're getting skimmed.
Now, one of the interesting things here, a majority of the sort of references or discoveries of this particular exploit running were people who were running a third-party store. So we're not just using the Android Google Play Store, because Google has some of the most fantastic security people on the planet. So their Play Store is really good about vetting applications. So one or two may slip by, but in general,
it wasn't always okay. Good.
But if you download a third-party store and start getting apps just random off the internet, then, you know, gotta help you, because anything goes at that point. So just be careful what you do with your phone.
Oh, the good old days. Yeah. So speaking of HTML skimming, smuggling, what is HTML smuggling?
It sounds so cool, like you're some sort of cyber pirate. So HTML smuggling is the ability to get a web page that you visit to download a piece of malicious code and put it on your computer. Which sounds a lot like if you just went to a normal website and clicked on a piece of software and downloaded it to computer. Same exact thing. However, your browser does it for you.
So this article, HTML smuggling surges, again, there's that word surges, highly evasive loader technique increasingly used in banking, malware, and targeted attacks. So this came out from Microsoft Security. It's a bulletin.
So imagine if you received an email on your phone or, you know, computer or whatever, and it has a link on it, and it looks, you know, quite official. Looks like it came from your bank or whatever. We all as security people know we'd never click on it. But let's say you click on it. What's the worst that could happen? You don't type in your username or password or anything like that. But when you click on it, automatically what happens is your browser opens, and without you needing to click on anything else, an executable or a zip file or whatever will download from the web server and automatically get downloaded into your downloads folder.
And it's executed then, right?
No. You as the user still need to run it. So then a lot of people say, okay, why are you giving this HTML downloading a fancy name like smuggling? Who cares, right? I as a normal user can go out and click on something and download it. Woohoo! If I still have to run it, who cares? In this particular case with HTML smuggling, the interesting part is it's designed to help evade perimeter security. So
meaning,
so let's say I'm a big organization and I have a bunch of firewalls on the outside that I'm watching for anybody who downloads an executable, and I deny it. I don't allow you to download executables into our corporate environment. You just can't do it. With HTML smuggling, what can happen is I take the executable that's sitting on the web server, and it gets broken up into a JavaScript binary blob. So just an object that's not an executable. It's just raw binary. Then gets pushed down to your browser locally, and your browser reassembles it back into an executable.
Oh my God.
So that way.
Now, you didn't happen to use this recently, right?
I don't know what you're talking about. So there's.
You seem to have a lot of detail here. I know, assuming that was the last page, the last engagement.
The rules pick you up. You bypass it this way. So it's interesting. And there are certain threat actors like the Nobelum Group that have been using this type of tactic to bypass any type of firewall rules, any type of perimeter rules, to get either DLLs or executables pulled down to your computer.
The key here is anything you download from the internet, your browser or firewalls or things like that are going to mark as internet content. And that's the basis for which it's usually blocked.
Yeah.
And so by doing this, it's smuggled. It's not going to be, it's not going to have its,
it's not going to pick up the mark of the web.
Its transport stamps. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's not going to have the mark of the mark web. Of the that's web. A, that's the best way to say it. Which means that once it's where it's supposed to be, it'll run.
Yeah, and it also bypasses your content filtering. So, you know, if you're a really tight organization and say you can't download anything over the internet, this would still download, right? Because it's just coming in as raw data, looks like part of the HTML page until local JavaScript writes it down to an actual file.
That's scary. So how do I know? I mean, is this something your average Joe needs to be concerned about? How do I know
if this is happening? It absolutely is. Yeah, and one of the things I would say here is if you ever go to a web page that then says on the page or in the email or whatever, oh, now, by the way, you need to go click here and run this executable. Don't do it, right?
All right. But, you know, the very reputable websites will typically send, especially when you register for the first time, send an email with a link that you have to click on in order to continue and complete your registration.
Right.
That's not the same thing,
that's
is it?
That's not the same thing. No. It think more along the process of if any of you have ever joined a Zoom meeting or a GoToMeeting and you go to click on that link, and it opens up the page and automatically downloads zoom.exe for you. And it goes, just run this to join the meeting. And you go, yeah, okay. We're okay with that because we know we wanted to go to Zoom. If you ever have that experience and you're not expecting it, like you're going to your banking site or you're logging in to Netflix or whatever, that's where I would worry.
So anytime you've clicked on a link that somebody has sent you, hopefully you don't click on it, but if you click on a link and an executable, a Windows or a Mac app comes up, and this is a desktop thing, I'm imagining. It's not an iPad or
yeah, there are ways to do this on mobile devices as well. A little bit more complicated. But so anytime...
I find mobile devices are a little bit more locked down than PCs.
They're limited, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. The limitations provides a little bit more, a little less room to maneuver for the hackers. And they're monolithic in that they only run apps as a very in a narrow space.
Yeah.
Whereas there's no print drivers on a iPhone.
Yeah, and I'd say so in general, as a rule of thumb, if you click on a link, whether it's an email or on a web page that you're reading, and automatically something downloads, never run it.
But how would you know if it's automatically being run? Like that's what happens with Zoom.
It won't. You'll see it. You'll see it download.
You'd have to
like with Zoom, it'll download to your downloads area, right? There's nothing says you need to click on it, right?
Yeah, so, but usually it just, I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, because it's been a while since I installed Zoom, but I'm, you know, or GoToMeeting or anything like that, they just run. Like Teams does it too.
Yes.
You click on it and, but is it asking you, do you want to download and execute this thing now?
No. So this will download, but will not automatically execute. And okay. Same thing generally happens with Zoom and Teams and that sort of stuff. But what happens is it's the first time. So when you click on Zoom for the first time and it downloads or GoToMeeting and it downloads that temporary executable to join the meeting, when you click on it, it's like, hey, do you want to run this now?
Okay.
Now you can tell it to always run from Zoom or whatever, or always open in my Zoom app after that. But
and those are plugins typically to the browser that then do that.
Correct. Right. But a normal executable, if you just go to a website and download an executable, it's never going to run unless you double click on it.
I have a question for you guys, and this is related. How often do you completely blow away your machines and reinstall Windows from scratch to get rid of the cruft?
So that's a trick question. And here's why. First off, a lot of the browsing that we do for work is done through virtual machines.
Virtual machines.
Through proxies. And the virtual machine has no save state. So when we shut it off, it's gone. So everything we've been browsing, everything et cetera, is just gone.
That's not a bad idea in general, you know. Use a virtual machine for browsing the internet.
And for email.
Yeah.
Yep. And that way, if it compromises things, et cetera, it doesn't matter. It's on that box. If it encrypts that entire machine, shut it off, turn it back on, it's fine.
That's a great idea.
We carry around little... you could call them USB drives, but they're actually NVMEs. And like an NVMe drive is a memory drive.
Okay.
And so you know how with laptops you can add a one or two terabyte hard drive. Mm-hmm. Most computers come with multiple slots for those. Mm. we buy them in 2 and 4 terabyte sizes. Terabyte's pretty expensive still. Dwayne's showing right now. Yep. We can't show it to the
crowd. Yeah, that's my boot drive in my new desktop computer, actually.
So we carry it on a USB hard case, a metal case.
Cool.
And all of our VMs are on there. All of our data's on there. Wow. So we can go from system to system. Like I have a folder called work in progress and all the documents I'm working on are in there. So I can move from one computer to another.
That's cool.
Without worrying about it.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty smart. All right.
And then you don't care about how often you destroy the shit system.
Wicked smart.
Wicked smart.
All right. So before we leave, this didn't come about because of anything in the news, but, you know, DNS hacks happen all the time.
And, poisoning.
Yeah. We talked about DNS a couple shows ago. Which was that?
Yeah, it was a few weeks ago.
Trick or treat? I don't know. Whatever it was.
That was when you and I were alone.
Yes. Probably.
Yeah. You're so lonely without you, Dwayne.
Lonely. Right.
All right. So anyway, there's a new protocol called DNSSEC, D-N-S-S-E-C, which I'm going to link to an article where the author calls it the secret weapon against DNS attacks. And so...
This is a great idea. It's an example of how, remember how you guys were talking about FTP and how ancient and old it is? Mm. DNS is older.
Yeah, it is.
And so anything that will secure it, and there's attacks against DNS, this would solve it. But think about all the infrastructure that has to be updated. Think about all the systems that have to, it'll take us 5 years, 10 years to implement.
Let's rewind back, and Patrick and I are going to act out a browser session, and Patrick's the DNS server, and Dwayne is the website that I want to reach. So here you go. Hey, Patrick, www.dwayneshouse.com.
I don't know that one. Let me go ask somebody.
All right. So he comes back.
Well, that's how DNS works.
Yeah. 179. So he finally comes back with something like 179.this.that.whatever.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So then my browser goes to that IP address because, as Patrick said before, it's like the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the phone book. He's like my contacts. I don't know the person's phone number, but I know their name.
Right.
Here's the dangerous part. Your DNS, the DNS you just asked, which was me, doesn't actually know.
Yeah.
It has to go ask someone who's in charge of that namespace.
Right.
And he doesn't know that DNS server. So it could be an imposter.
Well, he could have it cached.
And therefore give me a fake name, and that's DNS poison.
He could have it cached, though.
Correct.
In that case, he would know.
I could. Yep. If you've ever hit it before and you got the right one that last time, then yeah, but that time's out.
Yep.
The danger is if I go back and I say, hey, who owns this domain, and I get pushed to a server and someone has intercepted that traffic and poisoned it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to give you the wrong address. And that's what we're trying to eliminate with DNSSEC.
Right. I think that was in the OK Facebook, because remember, Facebook had a sort of DNS issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't really a DNS issue, but whatever. So DNSSEC is the elevator pitch is you can trust that a signed zone was not tampered with between the authoritative server, that's Pat, and me. And if you go through a DNSSEC validating resolver, you know, that means someone can't mess with DNS packet in transit. And interestingly, I get my domains from DN Simple.
Yep.
And we just interviewed a guy from DN Simple, and that came up.
Oh, that's
Enrique
awesome.
Comba.
Yeah, yeah. It's very similar to the way that when you visit a bank website, they have encryption, right? So they have an asynchronous, you have that little lock, the HTTPS, right? They have a private key that they hold on to. All their data comes through encrypted. And if you can pull down their public key, which is the pair to the private key, and decrypt the data, you know you're getting it from the server. Same thing here. There's going to be a public-private key pair for DNS. So when you get a domain and you get that IP address, you're going to be able to validate through that public-private key, because that data is going to come down, in essence, encrypted. And then you're going to be able to say, oh, yeah, this is actually the right IP address because it did decrypt with this company's private key.
And we'll need another indicator in the browser to tell you not only that it's HTTPS, but it's DNSSEC.
Yeah, which I'm actually surprised this hasn't happened. And I know we talk about the systems being around since the 70s. I mean, DNS has been around for a very, very, very long time. But I'm surprised it's taken this long for us to get it would help some sort email of secure too. DNS transfer.
It would help make email more secure too.
Yep.
So I had a an email exchange with the guys at DNSimple, and they have basically, it's a switch on every domain where you can just enable DNSSEC. And he says, for what it's worth, I'd approach signing zones with caution, ensuring that you roll our non-critical zones first, and then moving to more critical zones once you're confident. I don't really know what that means, but
go slowly in case you screw things up. You break things.
Well, there's only one switch. I mean, you can manage it, but they do it all for you. So we're really, he's basically saying, hey, it's a new feature. Test it out. Make sure
it's electric chairs work that way too. They're still dangerous.
Yeah, you're right. So anyway, I went ahead and enabled DNSSEC on securitythisweek.com.
Woohoo! So there's one last thing I'd like to squeeze in.
Sure.
And full disclosure, there's a lot of news around it, but no one lost any money.
Okay.
And as far as I know, no like social security numbers or any dangerous things were caught in this breach. But there was a breach at Robinhood.com where hackers got identifying information about apparently 7 million users and tried to do an extortion.
Okay.
But the hack is interesting because it wasn't a technical hack. And I'm not surprised by that because the guys at Robinhood are very,
who's
very
Robinhood?
Capable. They're the phone trading. They're the ones that got caught up in GameStop trading.
They're a financial that controversy. For trading stocks, all sorts of stuff.
They were hyping GameStop and everybody agreed.
They weren't hyping it. They stopped people from trading GameStop at one point.
Okay.
And that because it was going a little crazy. They're an online trade company.
I think if I remember correctly, a bunch of people on Reddit got together and said, hey, let's all buy this particular stock for no reason.
To buy.
Okay.
So it's an online trading platform that's mobile-based. Okay. And they've got a great security staff, and I know that.
I was going to say, Patrick and I actually personally know and have worked with their security staff for well over a decade.
Not at Robinhood,
but the people who were there running at the highest levels, we've worked with them. They are some of the best in the industry. They're fantastic.
And so we were shocked. We were like, if they can get hacked, what are we doing here?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it turns out that someone talked a service agent into giving them access to something they weren't supposed to have.
Man.
It wasn't a technical failure. It was a human failure,
which happened.
Really the lesson here is there's no end to the vigilance. The price is eternal vigilance.
I think what you're saying is college students, get a liberal arts education. Be a good people person.
You know, you say that, but my degree, so I have a computer science degree and I have a BA. So I have a bachelor in arts and computer science. Huh. So I had to go through public speaking and
I have a BDA, bachelor in dark arts.
Liberal arts is a good degree.
I have a BS, but not in computers.
You have BS.
You know what PhD stands for? Pile deeper,
higher and deeper. Yeah.
Yeah.
MS is more
of the same.
You know, bullsh, more sh, and then pile.
I love how we
deeper.
Keep a PG at the end. It's good. Nice work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because there's a lot of 12-year-olds that are listening to Security This Week. I assume, anyway.
We can only hope.
Say, here's some old guys that are actually cool.
Then they come over.
Wait, we have guests? Yeah. What are we going to have guests? Is that what you're talking about?
Who are they?
I can't wait to meet them, too.
Are they going to be mean to us?
All right, guys, it's been fun. And a little bit scary, but never too much.
Take it easy.
Thanks, guys.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.